All right, you primitive screwheads, listen up.
Do you know what the problem is with you kids today? You guys think that all science fiction started in 1977 with Star Wars.
We put the picture's name on everything.
Oh, look, he's got a billion toys.
Baseball's the t-shirt.
What about movies like Forbidden Planet, The Day the Earth Stood Still, Solaris? What about Logan's Run?
Baseball's the lunchbox.
I have to possess this comic.
Baseball's the breakfast cereal.
I have Amigo Isis action figure.
Almighty Isis?
Baseball's the coloring book.
I say we stay here and fight it out.
Shut up, kid. You weren't even born when Star Wars came out.
You fuckers think that just because a guy reads comics he can't start some shit? I'll fucking take all you want!
Less annoying than your usual singing at the beginning of the show.
You don't know because you don't know what song I'm going to put there.
Awful.
This is Geek Stuff episode 31.
It is number 31.
Episode 31 incoming! Exclamation point.
Do I dare ask why or we're just going to go with it?
It's not related to anything.
Okay, so I'm just going to go with it then.
Well, no. I mean, we've had a lot of things that are incoming. So we feel like we want to catch up with a lot of the product that we've been looking at and checking out. And I think it's appropriate to call it incoming because that's, you know, that's what you do with that.
Sure. So is Lego making an announcement that they're not going to have enough blocks for Christmas? Is that considered incoming news?
Is that your segue into the news segment?
It is. I'm
that was,
you know,
awful.
My segues do normally stink, yes.
Yes.
So
without question.
I'm just going to keep moving forward.
Stink up the joint.
And pass the segue.
What is your news about Lego running out of blocks?
Yeah, Lego said that I guess they did some company restructuring. And they are not going to be able to fulfill all of their Christmas orders this year. They're not going to have enough blocks, particularly in the Lego City, Star Wars, and Technic sets.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, the Star Wars one is particularly uh-oh for us, although the other sets are, I mean, you know, just as much interest. But
that's a big license for them not to have a huge Christmas showing on.
Yeah, I guess they just can't. They can't put it out as much. I don't know what the restructuring exactly did, how it affected production. Unless there was a pause in production maybe somewhere along the lines and they weren't able to keep the continuous flow up. I don't know, but
shouldn't they sacrifice some other line in order that Star Wars may live?
Well, you know, with Hasbro announcing that they've got 50 billion figures coming out next year and they had 50 billion figures come out this year, the Star Wars line is okay. It's not really hurting.
Is there some kind of plastic shortage that I don't know about?
It might be. It's the great plastic famine of 06.
Is that what it is?
I doubt it.
So far, it's only Legos.
And I don't think they're making them out of cork. I know there's still a cork problem. So.
Is it a manufactured shortage like, say, the PlayStation 3?
No, that's just dumb. Really? Yeah. On Sony's part.
What's that, my personal what's that all opinion. About?
What all about?
Sony says that there is going to be around, I believe, 400,000 PS3s on launch date in the States, ready to sell, available. They're going to be hard to get. But they've been known in the past to to do this and to kind of manufacture hysteria over getting the consoles. Now, they do say that it's due to the fact that the Blu-ray disc is hard to make and they're having trouble getting the drive. So, no drive, no console, but there are analysts out there predicting that, oh, they're suddenly going to find some, you know, after the 400,000 have, you know, quickly sold out, and they're going to be selling, you know, 1.2 million by the end of, you know, by Christmas and things like that. So whether or not they're telling the truth is up for debate.
Anyway, Diamond Select has made an announcement that they picked up a license to distribute to manufacture and distribute Office Space products. From what I understand, it's kind of like bobbleheads and little statue-y type things. No figures, though, I don't
think. It's got to start somewhere.
Sure.
And, I mean, I don't get Diamond. I don't think that they do a great product. Although, some of the stuff we saw at Toy Fair this year was vastly improved over the lot that we saw the previous year. I think that's because they hired Gene St. John.
He's a genius, that guy.
I don't know how to say his name. That guy.
I know who you're talking about.
He's brilliant, that fellow. And the fact that they picked him up and he's doing... You could already tell when we saw some of the pieces at Toy Fair that he did. He's actually a sculptor extraordinaire. He used to be with McFarlane. Now he's independent.
Right.
Did, I think, most of, if not all, the work on the Stargate figures, which were excellent.
Did he do the Stargate figures?
Yes, sir.
I know he did all those Marvel dioramas and statues, but
No. What Marvel dioramas and statues?
We saw all those Marvel statues at Toy Fair last year.
The black
year.
And white ones?
No. Those full scale, the full color, like...
Yeah, he only did a couple of those.
He did but you the could Rogue tell... one. He did the Fantastic Four one. I was talking to him at the cocktail party, and he was showing me the ones that he did.
Well, but you can see the marked difference between his work and work that they've had done before.
Sure.
And so, but getting back to Diamond, it's, I don't know. I don't.
They're hit and miss, Diamond.
I don't understand their license acquisition of this line here, of this product here.
Well,
I mean, this is a movie, granted, it does have a little bit of a cult status, and I guess it kind of really gets driven home by The Office being such a popular hit and so on and so forth. But you know what? In the end, you know, it's not Rocky Horror. It's not The Warriors. It's not...
To me, this license seems better suited to a company like NECA.
Who's done this sort of thing.
Exactly.
You know, like Christmas Story.
Right.
Like it's a very... All right, granted, it's a holiday movie, but there really is kind of a niche following to it. And so that they were able to produce a lot of... items for it.
Oh, sure.
You know, a lot of product. I don't see that with this line. But I don't know. Maybe we can wait and see. Maybe they will do... Their only saving grace is, to me anyway, is if they do some sort of figures.
Yeah.
I mean, like, you know, it's very chic now to do just figures you can put on your desk, which we'll get into. So, that being said, to pick up another potentially iffy license is kind of... I don't know. What else you got?
Ben Affleck has come out this week and
really?
Said... Really? Well, not that way. That's awful.
After the kid?
It's true. He came out and he said, by playing a superhero in Daredevil, I have inoculated myself from ever playing another superhero. Wearing a costume was a source of humiliation for me and something I wouldn't want to do again soon. Now, he said this, I believe at one of the press releases for Hollywoodland when... Someone had inquired as to whether or not he'd consider a Daredevil 2.
Mm-hmm.
You know what? I don't know why he has this hatred for Daredevil. I don't think that the fans have a hatred for Daredevil. Surely it wasn't as well received as Spider-Man, let's say, right?
Right.
But I don't think it was awful. I don't think it was terribly received. I mean, personally, I enjoyed it. I thought Ben Affleck did a great job in it. I'd love to see a sequel just to see more of him and Bullseye.
Well, assuming.
But. What?
Assuming that it would be Bullseye.
Well, who else would it be?
Well, I would hope somebody else, I think, is the point.
No, I'd like to see Bullseye again.
I would too, but the point is you can't keep. I mean, it's like. I'm trying to think. It's like Freddy versus Jason 2.
Right.
All right, we've seen it. We get it.
Right.
You know, they're both indestructible or whatever. You know, it's like, okay, we've seen Daredevil and Bullseye fight. It's different in comics because they get a break sometimes for years where they don't face off against each other. But to have a movie, have it be the same, it'd be like Spider-Man fighting the Green Goblin in Spider-Man 2 and the Green Goblin in Spider-Man 3. And I mean Norman, not
right.
Harry.
Right.
Which is, I'm sure you're about to spring something on me about Spider-Man, aren't you?
Wow. It's like,
yep, it's
like,
it's
as
I
though
know.
You had it like in front of you.
I know.
And it was there and like you were feeling it.
I set you up. Knock it home.
So, Ain't It Cool News got its hands on some sketches. They're character sketches from the film of Sandman, Venom, and Green Goblin.
By who?
I don't know exactly because
they
were pulled.
Ross?
No, they were not.
Okay.
They were pulled before most people got to see them.
Right.
And I was all bummed and all disappointed because I was like, shit, I'm never going to see them. And then I'm doing the rest of my searching and I'm hopping around to some of the other sites that I go to, and I hit, I think it's comics2film.com, and there they are. So the problem is, Ain't It Cool News, way too big for its britches, and Sony put out a cease and desist and had them pull it. Comics2film.com flies into the radar, and so they have them up. And
right, and so do we.
Right.
You're probably looking at them right now. Who are they?
You certainly are. It's Sandman.
There's Sandman.
Green Goblin, the new Green Goblin, Harry.
And there's the new Green Goblin, Harry.
And Venom. Now, the Sandman one is spot on to A, the comic book Sandman, and what we've seen of Sandman so far in the trailers. No real big deal there.
Brown pants, green striped shirt.
Big clubby sandy fists looking thing.
Square cut, like,
yeah.
Like Arsenio Hall.
Yeah,
but
exactly.
White.
With the hair and... But so that one, you know, nothing special. I mean, we've all seen that character. The Venom one, while it's cool and we really all want to see Venom, speaking of which, the Spider-Man 3 trailer is supposed to debut sometime this week. I believe it's Thursday, the 9th of November. So I don't know where, but I'm sure you'll be able to find that online someplace.
Excellent.
And it's supposed to have Venom in it, I believe. So the Venom character design, while it's really cool to look at, and while I was like, ooh, Venom, it's kind of like, okay, it's comic book Venom, and it's kind of what I've been expecting and hearing about. The one that really intrigued me, though, was the Goblin. The design is what was kind of, it's kind of weird. It's exactly what I expected when I saw him for that split second in the teaser trailer that we've seen already, where he's got this face mask thing on, and it kind of looks like a Sub-Zero mask.
Uh-huh.
And he's kind of on, like, I don't know. His outfit's kind of like, I don't know how to describe it. His outfit's kind of weird. You have something?
I don't like it. I don't like it. He looks like a reject from the X Games.
Ooh, wow, that's... Yeah, it kind of looks like a snowboard. By the way,
that's insightful, Mr. Fantastic. Oh, wait. You're not Mr. Fantastic.
I was going to say, by the way, we have our good friend Ken in the studio with us tonight.
Ken! Hey. Hi, Ken.
So,
hey, Kev.
Yeah, he kind of looks like a snowboarder now that I think about it. Yeah, except for the goggles. He's missing snowboarder goggles.
Ooh, missing goggles.
We'll get to that later. Wait for it. So you can go and check those images out online now. And like I said, keep your eyes out for the trailer. I think we're still going to have to wait and see how it all plays out and what happens. As much as I don't like the snowboarder look, I'm happy to see them get away from the Power Ranger look.
True.
That we saw in the first film. So it's kind of like the lesser of two evils, maybe. I don't know.
I just figured it would be like Harry with jeans and a sweatshirt and just the mask on his head.
Yeah, that'd be awful.
Yeah, that's kind of what I thought it would be like.
No. Yuck. So on DVD this week, they put out the Transformers the Movie 20th Anniversary Special Edition DVD.
Who is they?
The DVD
Who's
company?
The mysterious they?
No.
You always say they're doing things. Who's they?
Sony BMG.
That's who it is.
But more importantly than that, and Mr. Fantastic, cue up the little stinger because I know Kev's going to want to play it for everybody.
Transformers.
Movie!
That's losing his mind.
There it is.
So there's an image online now of Bumblebee in both his robot and vehicle form, and it actually shows his weapon system. It shows his arm cannon, which looks pretty badass, and then it shows this shoulder missile launcher thing, which I don't really get. I don't think that that was on the original Bumblebee concept, and it seems a bit excessive, to be honest with you, but, you know, it's... They're growing on me. The character designs are growing on me. I know they're not traditional. I know that if you're a purist, it's not what they're supposed to look like. But this is a new incarnation of it. It's just like Optimus Prime, the Mack truck, Optimus Prime, the gorilla from Beast Wars. It's just another incarnation
of
the Transformers.
Was he Optimus Prime when he was a gorilla?
I think so. I think they still called him Optimus Prime. Yeah.
I thought he was different.
No, they still called him Optimus Prime. Actually, in all their incarnations, even in Armada, he was Optimus Prime, but he wasn't a Mack truck then either. He was something different. So they've all taken on some sort of incarnation in the different series that they're in. This is just another version of the characters. At least that's how I'm looking at it now, because I'm never going to get that traditional look that I'd really want to see. So I'm okay with that.
You don't think they're getting a little over-elaborate with some of these designs, though? They're a little... what I'm finding, and the stuff you showed me with Bumblebee, there's a little much going on there, it seems, anymore, with the wings and gears and stuff that's... And again, it's a departure from the traditional look, I understand that, but I think they're overdoing the detail from some of these designs that I've seen.
You know what's going to make it and break it for me? How they move and how they transform. Mm. Once I actually get to see them in motion, because... You know, some of the way they look, I think, makes sense from a transformation standpoint. So if the transformation looks smooth and all of the pieces look like they belong and they come from someplace legitimate, you know, it'll look okay. I mean, if you think about it, Bumblebee, you know, like the original Bumblebee, he has like the bumper kind of transformed and it was feet and he kind of had like a blocky walking thing going for him. I mean... And it worked, right? It worked back then. But if you're going to try to pull it into a movie and make it slightly more realistic, you kind of do have to tweak it and change it a bit to give it that feel.
I can't wait.
What, for it to suck?
I can't wait for it to suck. I can't wait to see the disappointment on your face.
Wow.
And we have to sit here after it opens going, oh, poor Matt handing you tissues. Because, well...
I'm sure I won't cry. I'll probably yell, but
I won't cry. Oh, you'll cry.
No, I won't cry.
I've seen... Did you know... Did you know
what?
One of the Transformers is a clone?
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I just can't let it go.
You're an asshat.
I got something that's brandy new this week. Looky,
ooh,
looky, looky.
Shiny.
This is the Firefly, the official companion, Volume 1.
Now, this is the official companion to the series, is that
to
correct?
The series, yeah. It's actually, it's got all sorts of interviews and with cast members. It's got full uncut shooting scripts for a bunch of the first four or five episodes, which is great. It's got unpublished images, behind-the-scenes shots, production arts, concepts, lots of close-ups. On little details like Mal's gun and holster and playing cards and knives. And, you know, it's one of those books that you get when you're a sick, sick fuck of a fan.
Like yourself.
And, yes. So I picked it up immediately. And what's even more exciting about the book, you can actually go to titanbooks.com and you can check out where I'm sure it's available everywhere.
Yeah, I'm sure.
$20, nice, thickish book. Full of lots of color pictures. What makes this very exciting is on the very last page, available in spring 2007, the official companion volume 2.
Ooh.
Because there just wasn't enough
in volume
room
one.
In volume 1 to put it all in there. That's how good this fucking show is. That's all I'm saying. And of course, what week would be complete
without a
good Marvel trashing? No, see, I want to correct this image right now that we have that all we do is bash Marvel. I love Marvel characters. I love the X-Men since I was 9 years old. I love the characters. I love the books. I love Marvel. I collect Marvel Legends despite it. I collected Toy Biz Marvel characters in the case.
Yep, I
on display in the studio is nearly the entire Toy Biz Marvel Collection. I don't hate Marvel. What I hate is the direction the company has taken in the last few years, which is to ignore any sort of continuity, to throw out any notion that continuity is what makes serialized storytelling good. And we have a great example of backwriting, if you will, that Marvel it's not really backwriting. It's Marvel Legacy, the 1980s handbook. And right. Basically, it's like the Marvel Universe handbook, which had basically like character synopses in the 80s. And it always give the real name, aliases, identity, occupation, citizenship, relatives, group affiliation, first appearance, history. I mean, it gave you all of these things.
Right.
You know, that you could, you can learn more about the character. It was great because, like we always say, not everybody can run out and get all these issues. But with a thing like the Marvel Universe Handbook, you could at least say, oh, that's what happened to him back then. Even though I haven't read the story, right, I get a little better of an idea. You find out where the first appearance is, that kind of thing.
Yada, yada.
It was really a great handbook in its day. Now they've gone in the last couple of months and they've started doing more of them. Trying to update it a little bit. They released the old ones in their essential volumes, which is basically black and white versions of the old color comics on shitty paper,
right?
For really cheap, which is great. This one is called the 80s handbook, and they say on the inside cover, imagine a handbook written at 11:59 p.m. on December 31st, 1989. So what we're supposed to appreciate about this is that this book was, this is exactly where these selected, mind you, very selected, characters were right at the end of the 80s.
Can I ask a quick question?
Sure.
That cover art, Wolverine, wasn't that the outfit he was wearing in the 90s?
No, it's... It,
wasn't the 80s the brown and yellow?
Yes, but that he did have the blue and yellow originally, not this blue and yellow one, mind you. But
that's what I thought.
Yeah,
okay.
I mean, he might have transitioned during that period. Okay, there's a lot of glaring bullshit in here.
Okay,
okay. I just want to hit a few points on why this is shitty.
All right.
Number one, as you page through, there were, at times, points where Marvel was not really forced, but with deals that they made and so on and so forth, they actually featured really awful Marvel characters. They actually featured characters that had nothing to do with the Marvel Universe and somehow thrust them into the Marvel Universe. A great example of this would be Crystar, the Crystal Warrior.
Wow.
Based on that awful toy line.
Ugh.
And somehow the universes cross, and of course they were able to tell some stories. He appears in here, which to me is like, give me a break.
Right.
Another disturbing thing is there's an entire 2-page spread on DP7, which is not part of the Marvel Universe. It's part of the new universe.
Right.
This is not a new universe handbook.
Well, that's in there because they're relaunching the book.
Well, irrelevant as to why it's in here. It's not part of the Marvel Universe.
Right.
So why is it in here? You know, I mean, stuff like that really...
That's not the one that really upset you.
No.
Come on.
I'll get there. I want to make sure I don't miss anything is really what it is. There's a lot... Night Mask. Also, new universe character. Characters like Rocket Raccoon.
Oh, God.
Nice.
And here we go. This has got to be the coup de grace right here. It's Peter Porker, the Spectacular Spider-Ham.
Oh, yes!
I mean, you know, it's a
right
cute...
Right in time for Thanksgiving.
It's a cute idea that they feel like... And, of course, Wolverine is in here.
Is he really?
It's a cute idea that you want to bring up and say where all of these characters are. And some of them are so obscure and probably dead that who would give a crap?
Right.
You know? But the point is that if you're going to print a book like this, I mean, I get it that it's part a goof, but is there not something better that we could waste our money on?
Well, what they should have done is they should have taken off Marvel Legacy from the cover, right? And then they should have put what the question mark or exclamation point, the 1980s Marvel Handbook.
Yeah, I
that'd
agree.
Be more nice. Appropriate.
I mean, calling it the Marvel Handbook, it's part of that structure. I understand that. Does anybody need to know what Night Mask was doing in 1989 when the new universe was floundering in its own juice?
No.
I mean, this, really. And no, of course they don't. But of course, like you said, with them trying desperately to get something off the ground that's actually one consistent universe, of course that stuff is going to appear. But considering the fact that this is supposed to be about the Marvel Universe,
right?
And there's at least three characters and so on and so forth that were not really the Marvel Universe. The New Universe stuff especially wasn't the Marvel Universe. The Crystar thing was a licensed product. It was a toy tie-in that they forced into the universe for the sake of promoting the toys. I don't get it.
I don't get it. Well, what else do you have?
Well, Matt, this Monday at the Toys R Us in Times Square, I attended the unveiling of the lost action figures from McFarlane based on the huge, mega popular, and mega creepy Lost TV show. The Lost line, Series 1, they not only unveiled, because, well, they've been unveiled already, but they've released them. They had them there for sale at Toys R Us, and I have to tell you, they weren't really flying off the shelves. They weren't really moving, as they say in the biz.
I still want them all.
And you know what? There was a couple of hundred people there who were very excited to get their Series 1, which we should say includes Locke, Kate, Jack, Charlie, Hurley, Shannon, and they have a diorama box of the Hatch with a special light-up feature.
It's that infamous scene with Locke peering into the hatch and Hurley's off to the side and Jack and Kate are in the back and Locke is banging on the thing, praying for it to show some sign of life. The light pops on and season one ends.
Right, so yeah. And also in attendance, speaking of Hurley, was Jorge Garcia.
Ooh.
And so the couple of hundred people who were picking up their toys were very happy to be able to get their Hurley and or their Hatch box set signed by Jorge Garcia. And Todd McFarlane was also there. And Brian Burke, who is one of the series creators, was also there as well, signing toys. So I actually have here my Hurley figure.
Right.
Signed by all three of them.
Right.
We should say this is a departure packaging-wise for McFarlane. He's actually gone back to card packaging.
Yes.
It's a box. I guess the best thing to compare it to would be like a sideshow piece.
It's kind of like a conglomeration between the old clamshell packaging and Sideshow 12-inch packaging.
Right, because it features the figure in a classic kind of box packaging, but then it has the flap with the Velcro.
And the flavor text.
Right, it has flavor text in there. It says about the figure. Hurley comes with the lottery ticket, the winning lottery ticket.
Which I think is brilliant, by the by.
And so...
And they have sound chips in them.
Yeah.
Is that correct?
But we should say this is an action figure.
Well,
should we?
It says on the packaging that it's an action figure.
Right. Doesn't really have a lot of what you would call action.
Right.
I believe Hurley sports
no
one.
Points of it. Was his head?
I think it's his head. Yeah.
Okay. I want to. Again, I blame McFarlane and the packaging for the fact that they called it an action figure. I personally don't have issue with the fact that it has no articulation. Again, I think certain figures lend themselves to articulation and some of them don't. These certainly, I don't feel, need them in order to achieve their goal.
They are what they are. I mean,
but don't call them an action figure.
Well, yeah. Well,
well, again, I blame...
I'm kind of on the boat with you there, Ken, but the point is that They're going to call it whatever they want regardless. Right. I mean, if they put one point of articulation in, it's not a plastic statue. So what is it?
Mm. I mean, regardless, so that, I'm going to buy it.
That's
so
yeah, matter. Exactly. And I'm sure you two guys, particularly big fans of Lost. Fantastic, you're a fan of Lost. Are you going to not get these as well?
I will not get these as well.
Yeah, I didn't think.
I'm trying to think of what character I would get. And I guess it would be Locke. Because in terms of action, he's the one that I see doing the most things throughout the episode, especially throughout the series. Now, you know, there's Saeed and
right.
everything, but Locke, I think, is the coolest, so I would go with that one.
Well, personally, Hurley is my favorite character on the show. I'm really eager to get that figure, but Locke is probably my second favorite, so...
There's a certain geek element that I think geeks will... Locke appeals to geeks because of his storyline and what he becomes. And, you know, there's kind of the most geeks, you know, may not be physical specimens, let's say.
Right. Oh, wait. So you mean to say Locke or Hurley?
No, I'm saying Locke because I think Locke was kind of a guy who was on the bottom of the barrel at work, but he could have, you know, he aspired for more. He had talents. He was interested in certain things like, you know, survival and guns and science and. He was a hunter. A lot of things that are themes that are prevalent throughout, like comics and stuff like that. And I think that he's probably the most popular one with geeks. If that's, you know, that's me going out on a limb, but I'd guess that.
He's almost a superhero on the island. You know, back on regular Earth, he was a schmuck, a regular Joe Blow. But here on the island, he's Superman.
Yeah, I mean, he has wisdom on the island as well. I mean, people come to him and he gives them advice and he speaks like he knows what's actually going on.
Right. He's smart.
Yeah, not only that, and he also exhibits flaws, but flaws that are hidden. You know, I believe in the third season, there's an episode where you find him crying because he's just so distraught, he doesn't know what to make of what's going on the island, and he's crying, but he's doing it in a way that he's trying to hide it, and you know, right, he eventually gets caught. So yeah, there's a lot going on with all those characters, but this is me going on a limb. I think geeks will like John Locke.
I will be getting Kate.
Well, of
course.
Because
she's hot.
Right.
Now there's the other type of geek.
I'm just gonna boil it down. And of course, if they ever did a Libby figure, I would immediately run out and get the Libby figure.
With or without the I'm gonna keep my mouth shut because you haven't gotten that far. So never mind.
Ooh.
I almost threw a spoiler out there big time. Ooh.
For what it's worth, I was gonna do the same thing. I was gonna say the same exact thing. So
Well, I knew in advance that Jorge Garcia was going to be there, and I also knew that Todd was going to be there and Brian was going to be there, which is great. Todd doesn't get out much on the East Coast, but he usually turns up in San Diego.
Sure.
And actually, last year, I think he went to the New York Comic Con. But anyway, it's always nice to see him out because he's just a wacky dude.
Right.
Right? I figure, here's my logic. They said that they would only be signing the Lost action figures, and only, you know, it was a Toys R Us thing, and if you spent this much, and blah, blah.
Right.
It was
right.
great. Don't get me wrong. It was a great event. Toys R Us should be commended for having these events.
Sure.
Because what other big chain is having kind of event?
Nobody. Toys R Us understands it.
Right. That being said, I decided to take a risk.
Okay.
I took my bag that we all know I bring to every con, and I threw in my bag a pair of figures I was hoping to get Todd to sign for me.
Okay.
And when I went there, I inquired as to what my odds were of this actually happening. And I was told, well, if you wait around till the end, you know, the whole usual thing. It's like getting a sketch or getting a picture with somebody. If you wait around till the end, maybe we can get you a picture and so on. And I'm like, all right, so I'll wait around till the end. And it actually turned out to be really interesting because you learn a lot about the process of setting up one and running one of these events and all the complications and trials and... pretty much what shitheads publicists are.
Okay.
So that being said, I grabbed out of the Big Kev's Geek Stuff product archive. There's the theme music. And I grabbed the McFarlane Toys Collectors Club special edition.
Todd figure.
It's actually called Todd the Artist, but back in the day it was called Todd the Bum.
Right.
Where it's actually an action figure of Todd McFarlane.
That was from the Spawn movie where he had his small cameo appearance, I believe. Yes.
And actually he was done as a tiny figure for one of those diorama kind of things. They took the piece, blew it up into a full-on 6-inch figure, and he was delighted to see it at the end of the show. And he actually stuck it in Jorge's face and said, see, I got my own one too, which I thought was really funny. Fantastic.
What does it say on the package as far as the name of the figure?
It says Todd the Artist figure.
But it was just known as Todd the Bum. Is that
because it was referred to as Todd the Bum when it was tiny.
I see.
Because that was his character, was Todd the Bum.
In the movie, he was a bum.
What?
So did he sign it?
Yeah, he signed it right there. Two big Kevin, Tom, and Clark.
Oh, nice.
Now, that was now this is exciting because now I'm ahead of the game. Because
right.
I got Hurley signed by the three guys. I got my Todd figure signed, which you know has been in the Big Kev's Geeks of Product Archive for many years.
Right.
Well, a more recent addition to the Big Kev's Product Archive, Big Kev's Geek Stuff, Big Kev's Geek Stuff Product Archive, is in the Spawn Evolutions, which is the 29th Spawn series. It featured a character that we've talked about on the show, known as Man of Miracles.
Sure does.
And as we all know, I am obsessed with the Miracle Man lawsuit and what's going on with it. So as kind of a, what would you call it? Kind of a goof.
Right.
I have two of these set aside in the product archive.
You said this before.
Yeah. One to be signed by Neil Gaiman, which hopefully will happen in San Diego in 2007 or sooner. And one to be signed by Todd McFarlane. Well, I was doing so well, having got my Todd the Bum slash artist figure sign, I whipped out Man of Miracles and stuck it in front of Todd, and a kind of calm came over Todd McFarlane, and he says, yeah, that one. And I said, yeah, do you have any comments about the lawsuit, Todd? And Todd said, yep, only time will tell. I've been involved in a lawsuit for 11 years, and it's still going on, referring to another lawsuit.
Right.
And that one's still going on,
I know,
and only time will tell. And I was like, okay, you could tell it wasn't really a topic that he wanted to discuss.
Sure.
However,
understandably so.
He did sign the toy. So I'm halfway there.
You know, one day we're going to have an episode of Geek Stuff where you are the featured guest. We're going to have to actually go through your sketchbook, because the Todd McFarlane sketch that you have in your sketchbook is probably one of, A, the best sketches I've seen in your book, and B, one of the better stories, especially because I was there to witness that story. So you've had some good luck with McFarlane in the past.
Well, Matt, I'm going to have to tell you no. I'm going to have to decline that invitation to come on our show as a guest. And here's why. In 2007, Big Kev's Critical Toys will be relaunching in January. And one of the features that's going to take place on Big Kev's Critical Toys. Right now, if you go to Big Kev's Critical Toys, it actually just points you back to Geek Stuff. Because me and Fantastic and our staff are overhauling the Critical Toys website to be relaunched in January. And actually, one of the amazing features on there will be my sketches, which we're scanning in, and I'm actually writing the stories.
Oh, good.
That
good.
Go along with them, so everyone will be able to check out those
awesome.
In January.
Awesome.
So I will decline the. I'll be the first person to decline an invitation to come on this program. Well, I'll be the second person. And speaking of that person who has declined to come on this show. Thirty pages of incoming, 26 pages of relevant toy news, and 6 pages of funny. Bravo. It's about time somebody listened. So, moving right along, that was the gist of the event there. I got all my stuff signed, which I'm absolutely stunned about. It was a great event.
Sure.
They're really happy about these toys, and they should be. They all look great.
I'd love to be able to end this segment on such a high note. You know, great story, great McFarlane stuff, but I can't. I've got to, you know, throw a monkey wrench into the works, bring us back down, ground us a little bit, and let you know about the Sarah Connor Chronicles, which is a pilot that Fox is developing and releasing shortly. Can you guess what that is, Kev?
Is it the Terminator TV show that they've been talking about since 1992?
Oh, it is.
Geek.
It so is. Lena Headey is going to be playing Sarah Connor in the pilot.
What? Yeah. Why? Because the other one's so fucking busy?
I guess.
Linda Hamilton is so fucking busy she can't do the role?
Apparently.
I'd like anyone, I'd defy anyone in this room to name something she's done in the last 5 years.
Ken,
fantastic.
Have you seen Linda Hamilton lately?
Nothing? Nobody?
Little rough around the edges?
Well, considering they're making this show now, and this is rumored to take place, what, just after T2?
It's supposed to take place between T2 and T3.
And between T2 and T3, she's like badass Uber Sarah Connor like she was in T2. She don't look like that no more.
Yeah, well.
That's because,
time's a bitch.
That's because Jim Cameron had his way and walked away. That's right.
Ouch. Ouch.
Hey, so, had her when she was hot, kicked her to the curb when she's not.
If you're interested Booyah! In following the lives of Sarah Connor and her son John Connor, you can check out the Sarah Connor Chronicles. I, however, will not.
You got to at least give the pilot a shot just to see how silly it is.
No, I don't.
Did they say he's playing John?
No, actually they didn't, so I don't,
yeah,
I don't know.
This is really in development hell then.
Yeah. Ooh.
I don't expect to see that.
Yuck.
So we'll let's take a break, and then we have our big, giant 30 pages of ink. I mean, our big incoming show talking about all the stuff that we've been putting aside for a while.
Matt, it's time for the National... The Comic Book Art and Sci-Fi Expo, the last great show of the year in New York City.
That's right, Kev. It's coming up November 17th, 18th, and 19th at the Penn Plaza Pavilion.
Right, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Friday from 1 to 8, Saturday from 10 to 7, and Sunday from 10 to 7.
For more information on the show, you can go to BigAppleCon.com.
Hey, did you see the guests on this thing?
I did.
TV's Batman, Adam West.
Val Kilmer from Tombstone, The Doors, and Batman Forever.
Michael Biehn from Terminator and Aliens, as well as a couple of The Warriors.
Nice.
David Harris, who played Cochise. Roger Hill, who played Cyrus.
Can you dig it?
And Apache Ramos, who was one of the orphans.
In addition, Geek Stuff will be there as well, so stop on by and say hello.
Right, and we will be there alongside such great comic artists as John Romita Sr.
and Jr.
Bernie Wrightson, Neil Adams, Travis Cherist. You want to come down and you want to see this show, go to BigAppleCon.com for more information and come and say hi when you're there.
Five richest families in the world, known as the Pentaveret. I love that movie.
I know you do. I love it too. But
all right, you ready?
Yeah.
Let's do some stretches.
Let's do some.
Because we are going to fire through these fine, fine products.
Did you see his stretch? His stretch had one point of articulation to it. It was just his head.
I did the.
He had the Hurley articulation.
I did the Hurley articulation stretch.
Left, there it right, is. Left, done.
All right, we get a lot of beautiful product here at Big Kev's Geek Stuff, and we appreciate every bit of it, and
we
want to talk about every single piece of it, so we're going to do that right now.
Okay, let's go.
before the products hit the Big Kev's Geek Stuff product archive,
right?
They start here.
In the studio.
In the studio, damn it.
And tonight, we're going to start with a Tonner piece, or a Tonner selection.
Can we say enough about the Tonner action? What are the Tonner figure company?
Yes.
Tonner figures.
Tonner Inc.
Tonner Inc.
Okay.
You've heard us talk about them. You're going to continue to hear us talk about them because I got off the phone with them, and I'm telling
well
you.
Well into the future.
Yes, and actually, we are going to have Mr. Tonner on this program.
Are we?
We are.
Interesting.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
So that being said, we are talking about
a couple of accessories and a figure. I'd like to hit upon the accessories real quick first.
Okay.
Okay. We got in studio a Crookshanks accessory and a Hedwig accessory. Now, these accessories are in the same line that the Tri-Wizard Goblet and the Firebolt that we had previously discussed.
Right.
Are in same kind of scale, same kind of...
They're in scale with right. Tonner's 16-inch figure
line.
Series.
Right. So... Crookshanks, there's not a whole lot to say about Crookshanks. I mean, he looks great from the movie. You know, the sculpt is spot on. He actually has like real feel kind of whiskers to him, which I thought was kind of neat.
He's actually Hermione's cat.
He is Hermione's cat.
Right. And Hedwig is Harry's owl,
yes.
Correct?
The impressive part about Hedwig that I thought was that he actually has feathers on his back. They're not just like
sculpted
in. They actually put feathers on his back. So I thought that was pretty neat. I thought that was a nice touch.
Right. Their level of detail and accuracy is always so spot on. However.
Okay. This is a little different because we got in the studio the Harry Potter, Harry as the Seeker figure from Goblet of Fire.
Right. Which is basically Harry, my opinion, Harry in his Quidditch outfit.
Correct.
He's got the sweater and the pants and the robes, and he's got the leg pads, the arm pads, and the hand pads.
All of which are not sculpted onto the body. They're separate accessories that
individual
you actually have
pieces.
To put on
right.
to Harry.
Right.
Which is great.
And there's nothing more exciting than to be sitting, dressing your Harry Potter figure from Tonner when a bunch of your friends come over to play video games.
Right. How'd that go for you?
So what you want to do is you want to, well, first of all, actually, you want to make sure and get each and every one of these pieces.
Sure.
Secondly, you want to handle them alone. You want to make sure that, you know, this is some private time with you and your collection, and that's when you're putting the accessories together and so on and so forth.
I don't know about you, but I don't really want to call it private time. I'd rather just say that I was putting the accessories on the figure for proper display.
Regardless, it does not help the tough guy Halo image I'd imagine before game time, huh?
Well, what I'm saying is if Tonner would do a Halo piece,
right,
I would have no problem setting him up in front of my friends.
Well, we have a couple of things to say about this piece that are a little bit different than what you would normally hear us say.
And you and I do not agree.
Well, it's not that we don't agree.
Okay,
let's get to it.
Right, let's start from the beginning. Obviously, the figure is great. The
amazing.
The likeness is great. Everything is spot on. The costume, the outfit's great. It's a little difficult to put it all together. You just got to be patient because everything is so authentic. Like, the pads are not just, you know, like, they're not sculpted on. So what you need to do is you actually need to put them over the sweater, and you need to unlace them
because
they're actually laced. You need to unlace them, put them on, relace them, or tighten the laces back up,
right.
Tie it off, and so on.
And on
so
the
forth.
Leg pads, you have to actually work the buckles on them, which
right.
is really hard when they're that tiny, but...
Very satisfying.
But, right, when it's done,
all
set up,
right.
Very, very satisfying.
Very
I
satisfying.
Agree.
That being said, we have three problems.
Okay.
Three problems.
Let's get into it.
Wait, is it three or two?
Two. I know of two.
Okay.
So.
Let's say two because maybe I'm thinking twice on one.
Okay.
The first problem is, and it's not so much a problem as it is a curious point.
Okay.
And that is that they did not do a different hand sculpt for Harry's right hand. Now, the regular... the Harry body here that they've been using for all these is the same.
Right.
Okay. So what they've done is they have kind of that, you know, that V-shaped hand
right.
on the left, and the right hand is holding the wand.
Right.
Or it's sculpted in such a way as to hold the wand. Now, our problem with this is this is where I get two, because this is like two problems, but this is problem one, part A.
Okay.
Problem one, part A is that with this hand, Harry cannot hold the broom.
Correct.
Right? That's problem one. So that's that being problem one. Problem two is that the hand pad for this hand does not fit on the hand. Because the hand is closed in such a way as to be holding the wand, the hand pad that goes over it, that is, if you can imagine like a glove with no fingers.
Right.
You can't put it, I mean, you put it on and it's kind of just awkwardly covering the hand. It doesn't right. look, it's not glaringly a problem, but if we're talking about a company that's so detailed and so on and so forth, to have something as minute as that, let's say, as replacing one hand, be a problem, to me it seems that that was something I think that they should have corrected.
Okay.
They should have put a different hand in there, one the glove could fit on, A, and one that he could hold the firebolt with. Because it makes sense that if he's holding it with this hand, he's reaching with the other hand for the seeker.
Okay. Now, here's where...
Or the... What's that? The snitch?
He's reaching for the snitch, yeah, right. as the seeker. Okay. Here's where my thing is. I agree with the glove. I think the hand sculpt maybe should have been a little bit better to fit the glove.
Right. Well, it's the same one that they've used right. for the ones up to... Which has been perfect for the pieces up till right. now.
I don't necessarily have a problem that it's the wand hand, because I think what they're going for here, which is going to segue into, I think, one of the next things we're talking about. I think where they're going for here is Harry actually in the tournament, where he's actually using the wand on the broom. He's not going for a snitch. He's using the wand to fend off the dragon and to save his ass. I think that's why they gave him the wand hand. And because the license is Goblet of Fire and then moving forward, not the past, I think that's where they're going with it. So I don't necessarily have a problem that they gave him a hand that holds the wand. The hand is just awkward in the glove.
Right. Well, I think I'm going to disagree with you.
Okay.
Because this is Harry as a seeker for the Gryffindor house. And as a seeker for the Gryffindor house, this is his Quidditch uniform. And if it's going to be his Quidditch uniform, he, to my knowledge, has not used the wand while playing Quidditch.
No, I don't believe so.
Nope.
So, therefore, my opinion is the hand should have been redone so that it could hold the broom and the other hand could reach for the snitch. Right. That being said, that leads us into at least my second problem, if you will.
Okay.
When I opened my Harry, I realized that he did not have his goggles.
Correct.
And I thought that there was some sort of mistake.
Right.
Like that maybe the goggles accessory had not made it into my particular package. So I called up Tanner and I said, I got no goggles. And while I was waiting for our friend at Tanner, to get back to me to let me know what was going on there, I checked the image out on the website and he had something on his face, but it wasn't goggles. It was glasses.
Glasses.
He was wearing his glasses. When our friend at Tanner got back to me, I said, I'm confused because there are no goggles or glasses, but in the picture there's glasses. And we were informed that there was that they were not happy with the way that the goggles had come out, so they opted to go with the glasses instead. Which to me sends up a giant red flag. Because if you are going to do the minute details of the costume of the character like they have done extraordinarily up till now, I mean, from every little nuanced little thing
right.
that we've discussed in the past, right up until this point, why not wait and get the goggles correct?
Okay. Again, and I, if I remember correctly, when he was battling the dragon, I don't believe he was wearing the goggles. I believe he was only wearing his glasses. So, again, if they're going with that depiction.
Was he wearing his Quidditch outfit to battle the dragon?
I think that he was.
I don't think he was. I think he was wearing a different outfit altogether, which I think is part of the Tri-Wizard trunk set that they're selling.
Okay, I could be wrong. I don't know.
I don't believe he's wearing the Quidditch outfit when he's fighting the dragon. I remember that being a black right. sort of thing.
Okay, I could be wrong.
That being the case, either way, this is his Quidditch uniform that he is seen in all the movies
right.
and the movies to come. Presumably there will be a Quidditch scene in them. I don't know. I don't read books. So I read the books. I read books. That being said, this is him in his Quidditch outfit. The goggles should have been included. Now, if that meant that they had to delay the release of this figure by a week or a month or whatever, I think they may have considered doing that.
You think Tanner is the kind of company to say, oops, you know, we realize we missed on the goggles, and they'll rectify that in the future?
I don't know, because Tanner is only now starting to feel the wrath of the collector from our perspective. Don't forget, Tanner coming off of a big
right.
fashion doll popularity, huge popularity, legendary. They have their own convention Florida in May. I mean, their collectors are unbelievable. They're like junkies. I mean,
right.
they're crazy people. I mean, granted, good people, but, you know, crazy for the Tanner stuff, which I understand. That being said, to me, seems like something was pushed here where they may have wanted to just give it a little more time to develop. That being said, whether they're going to hear the wrath about that, I don't know. But I'll tell you this much, they're already hearing the wrath about the images they've released of Wonder Woman and Supergirl.
Right.
Because the complaint is that Wonder Woman isn't muscular enough, and what is that Supergirl costume? Well, listen, I'm going to be the one to say this to you. Tanner has said these are based on the imagery and the costume design and the way that the characters looked in the Silver Age.
Right. Okay.
Wonder Woman was not a big, muscular wrestler in the Silver Age.
She wasn't China in a tiara.
Yeah, exactly. And the complaints that she's thin and she doesn't have any tone and shut up.
Well,
it's a great, they look fantastic.
We're going to get to those once they hit, once
right.
they get a little bit closer.
But let's keep
rolling because we have a lot of stuff to talk about tonight.
Right. So let's move on from there because we gotta get to all these things. And
I mean, there's
a
lot of it.
Hey, I don't care if it takes the rest of the episode. I don't care. That's how much I don't care. I don't care if it takes 2 days.
Well,
I get a comfy seat. I get a comfy seat, listeners.
I'm not in a comfy seat.
Because I'm just saying.
My chair in the studio sucks.
There's a reason. One of the reasons, Ken, actually the only reason, Ken is here tonight. We actually got some incredible pieces from Soda that are based on, they're called Nightmares of Lovecraft.
Right.
Which is pieces inspired by the works of H.P. Lovecraft.
Correct.
And I know nothing about H.P. Lovecraft. I read some stuff when I was younger.
Right.
Didn't really do it for me. The whole Cthulhu thing.
Miskatonic.
Yeah, never really did it for me. Except, and really, the only truly collectible piece of anything related to Cthulhu that I have is I have that original Deities and Demigods.
Yeah.
That had the Cthulhu mythos in it that
oh,
they
wow.
sued to have reprinted without the Cthulhu mythos.
I have the plush Cthulhu with the Santa hat, I think, at home in my personal collection somewhere.
That's great. But that's lovely, Matt. But let's get to the pieces here. Ken, maybe you can tell us quickly about the three pieces that we've received here.
At a glance, looking them over, they're really good likenesses. The with all the artwork that you've seen about Cthulhu, and they have a second one, the Dagon, the water god from, what is it, the Shadow of Innsmouth? One of his stories?
I believe so. It was actually prior to Cthulhu. I think it was one of his first earlier works from
Dagon, isn't it? Isn't the book called Dagon?
No, it's the shadow over Innsmouth or something like that is the story that he came from.
Okay.
And whatnot. And he's part of this whole Cthulhu mythos that everybody rants and raves about. The third piece is actually from a non-Cthulhu story. It's a Lovecraft story called Pickman's Model, which is one of those deals about a painter named Pickman, paints all these horrific images, and then in the end they realize what he gets this ghoul character, where he gets that image from is an actual photograph of the ghoul in his basement.
Oh.
So the ghoul, of course, he sacrifices people. I think Pickman is actually a victim of the ghoul, and someone else is writing about him. So it's honestly, of the three, I'm with Kevin. I think the ghoul is my favorite piece.
To me, he kind of reminds me of kind of a really demented werewolf.
Well, that's why you like him.
Yeah. Well, I have no basis. Well, I have no basis of liking or not liking these. They're terrific sculpts, I guess.
You know what? Soda, for me personally, I think Soda hits and misses sometimes. I think the Cthulhu figure is nice, but a better representation of the Cthulhu character would be the WizKids Cthulhu piece from the Horror Clicks line.
You're going to bring up that pain, aren't you?
I'm sorry. I have to. But I really like the Dagon piece. I think the Dagon piece is actually really pretty creepy and kind of invokes more of a awful sort of imagery than the Cthulhu piece
does.
Yeah,
the Cthulhu is, I mean, Cthulhu himself is, he's, as far as horror goes and Lovecraft goes, Cthulhu is like the iconic piece, so there's
right.
really, you don't get a sense of horror from him anymore. He, you know, they make a plush Cthulhu, for Christ's sake.
They make Cthulhu slippers.
Cthulhu slippers. So he's gotten to that non-threatening iconic status, but wherein, like, Dagon is genuinely horrifying looking. It's an ugly, but beautifully done piece.
Yeah, he's creepy, but he probably is my favorite out of the three.
This is part of their Now Playing series, which is kind of birthed off of Movie Maniacs and so on and
right.
so forth. It's kind of figures that are based on, largely in the past, they've been films and so on and so forth, and this seems to be going in a different direction. So good for Soda for striking out in new areas.
Yeah, well, I don't
know. Striking out like they failed. I think they're great pieces.
I don't understand,
like, you know,
why they're part of the Now Playing line. As far as I know, they haven't really been part of a film. I mean, they were part of Lovecraft's novels, and then there certainly is all sorts of mythology and mythos around them.
Right.
There was a game, Call of Cthulhu, is a very popular RPG that's they're bringing back actually pretty feverishly. There was a book released in 2005. There's another book coming out in 2007 to continue the mythos and continue the game.
Mm-hmm.
But as far as a film goes, Now Playing.
Well, there's been so many incarnations of films that are loosely based on Lovecraftian kind of thing. I mean, Alone in the Dark, the video game which became a movie, is
right.
all has roots in Lovecraftian
Lovecraft.
Type stuff. You know, so to actually go and do a Lovecraft film, it might be self-defeating at this point. I don't know. I don't know that it would ever happen.
Well, let's sum up by saying that they're beautiful pieces. Right. What is that website, Matt?
It's sodatoys.com.
Sodatoys.com. Go there. Check them out. Find out where you can get a hold of them. If you're a Lovecraft fan, you're definitely going to want to get a hold of these.
Mm-hmm.
I know Ken is in raptured with these. I like the Pickman's model because it looks like a werewolf, but I mean, as far as they go, they're great figures. Just not my cup of tea.
Right.
Subject matter wise.
Sure.
Let's move right into one of our favorites, which is DC Direct.
Right.
And their latest line just hitting right now, it's Batman Dark Victory.
Right.
It's based on the art of
Tim Sale. Is that correct?
Which, it was a book by Jeff Loeb and Tim Sale. And these are not the first figures to be based on Tim Sale. We actually had the Long Halloween figures, which were also based on the art of Tim Sale. Featured in this line are Batman, of course.
Right.
Commissioner Gordon. It's actually
right.
a younger Commissioner Gordon, which is actually really cool. We'll get to that in a second. The Scarecrow.
Right.
And a two-pack
featuring Robin and the Penguin, which is great because they're both kind of diminutive characters as drawn by Tim Sale.
Right.
So they've gone ahead and for the same price, same low, low price, they have given you both characters in one package. So you're actually, it's five characters in the line. It's four packages total.
Correct.
They have the box type packaging that they've been doing for the artist specific series like Kingdom Come, the Jim Lee series, Hush, the Long Halloween series. So they'll actually work great just staying in the package if you like that sort of thing. And I have to say, I'm really impressed again with the DC Direct sculptors being able to have the art of Tim Sale walk off the page.
I'd like to say that as far as the sculpt work goes on the pieces, I love it. I think that they are very well done. I think they are handled well. But I'm really not jazzed about the Tim Sale art. I'm not like the Batman piece, really not feeling it. He kind of has a goofy look on his face, as Ken pointed out earlier.
I pointed out earlier that it reminded me of Tom Petty, but looking at it again, it looks like Lurch in a bat suit.
Wow, yeah.
It's like,
I
it's like
see
Richard
that.
Mull as yeah. Batman.
Okay.
I mean, I think the Commissioner Gordon piece is fantastic.
One of the probably one of the better DC Direct pieces, I think, is that Commissioner Gordon.
And the Penguin piece, I happen to really, really like too. I think that if you kind of take the Batman piece and maybe like the hat and the hair from the Scarecrow piece, and you put them together, it's some paint, and you can kind of get like a Tom Petty figure out of him. But I don't know. Wow. I'm not feeling the Tim Sale art.
What a fucking stretch that was.
I'm not feeling the Tim Sale art.
Love
the figures though, as far as their quality. Just
again, it needs to be said that it with any artist, it's an acquired taste.
Sure.
I'm not particularly fond of the art of Darwin Cook.
Okay.
Who did the New Frontier series that came out
right
a while ago. I'm not particularly fond of his artwork. It harkens me back to an era that I'm, you know, where the artwork just didn't jive with me.
Right.
What I'm impressed with is the fact that these guys over at DC Direct able to get the sculptors, or the sculptors able to get the nuances of the artwork to happen in three dimensions.
Sure.
I think it's amazing.
Again, I give them credit for that. It's just, you know, it's not my cup of tea.
Right. Here's Batman Dark Victory. Oh, sorry, Kanga.
Random question as far as DC Direct goes. Do they deal strictly with superhero line and DC line, or is there the possibility somewhere in the future that we'll see DC Direct hit on Vertigo stuff?
They've done Vertigo stuff.
Namely, I'm after a Preacher line.
They did
that
a Preacher
really
line.
Nails it.
They did a Preacher figure.
DC Direct style.
Yeah. Four of them. Four characters from Preacher.
I mean, it's early DC Direct.
I'm out of the loop.
They did Sandman, all the Endless, Sandman Death, Destiny,
Preacher,
all those characters. Preacher,
Constantine.
They did. Constantine, they did.
I want a Cassidy from Preacher.
They did him.
Along that line of quality. Because, like you said, the art leaps off the page into the sculpts. So.
Those early DC Direct figures definitely don't have this quality that DC Direct has morphed into.
Well, actually, I'm going to disagree with you.
As far as
slightly.
The artwork.
Right. And actually, in that particular case, it actually does match up rather nicely with the art of that young man who was doing
Steve
Preacher.
Dillon.
Yeah, it actually matches up very nicely. So I'm not disagreeing with you in the sense that, you know, when DC Direct got started, they had problems. But that's kind of you're kind of coming into the era with that line.
Oh, sure.
Where they started to fix those problems and they started to get into more interesting stuff.
But DC Direct has been known to revisit pieces that maybe didn't come out great or they may not have been 100% happy with. So the possibility of revisiting all those Vertigo characters certainly is possible, especially with Neil Gaiman moving forward with a Death movie. With all this talk about a potential Preacher series being developed for HBO.
Was Stardust Vertigo?
Stardust was Vertigo, I believe.
So that movie's coming as well.
So the possibilities are definitely there to see them again. I mean, I'd love to see them as well. So we'll see.
So it's Batman Dark Victory, five characters from DC Direct, extraordinary translation of the art of Tim Sale. You can check those out online at dccomics.com in their DC Direct section. And with that, we will end this segment of... What's that, Matt?
No, no, we're not done.
What?
We're not done.
Oh, good God, there can't be more.
We haven't even hit upon Sideshow.
Well, let's get right into Sideshow. Big Kev's Geek Stuff favorite. Sideshow has got a boatload of superior product hitting the shores of the U.S. here. What are you holding there, Matt?
Well, I'm going to talk about something first that Sideshow is distributing.
Sideshow has started something which we should all appreciate, which is importing some of these harder-to-get Japanese products like Mediacom and Hot Toys.
Right, and which is a Hong Kong-based company.
Right. Which is right, Chinese, not Japanese, because I stink. Go on.
So what we have here is two pieces from their Alien versus Predator line, which while the movie may have not been so hot and the sequel probably won't be either, the different variations on the Predator still are nice, and seeing the pieces still are nice. We have the Elder Predator and the Chopper Predator here in studio tonight. These are 6-scale, fully posable model kits. They're kind of in that same vein as the Kotobukiya Star Wars pieces.
Well, not exactly, Matt, because once you put them together, they are fully articulated.
Right.
Right.
Right, but what I mean is that model kit sort of packaging deal
feel
right
where they come in
but these are obviously fully posable,
right?
Like I said,
it's almost like you get it's almost if you can imagine getting a Star Wars Luke piece with that's all in pieces,
right?
And then you put them together and you have a 12-inch action figure.
Correct.
This is the same sort of idea, like Matt said, but it's packaged as a Kotobukiya, like a Kotobukiya piece, where each piece is packaged individually. And then you put them together to form a 12, 13, 14-inch action figure, whatever he ends up being.
And these are not vinyl pieces. I mean, these are actual rigid plastic.
Yeah, I think they're pretty solid.
Yeah. Yeah, they look pretty solid. To be honest with you, I don't know if they're vinyl or not. I don't think that they are. It doesn't say that they're vinyl, so.
I'm sure parts of them are vinyl. Parts of them are plastic.
Well, the armor is all vinyl, and the armor is our comes in separate pieces, so you're gonna have to attach that yourself to said Predator figure.
What's great about these pieces, I think, is that, you know, timing aside, the Predator is really kind of a great science fiction action villain, if you will, or creature, in the sense that he really does touch. They really have married him so many times to so many different licenses. Including the fan film that we always talk about, which is Batman Dead End,
yes,
where he fights these predators. I mean, it's such a great type of character, these hunters from space, and they're all dreadlock looking, and they got these crazy weapons and armor, and they're really it's really kind of a brilliant design by the guys over there at Stan Winston Studios, and it's great to see that somebody has done some really decent 12-inch figures of them. I'm really happy that Hot Toys did them and that Sideshow is distributing them.
Sure. Moving past the Alien versus Predator, we also have the first Sideshow 12-inch Lord of the Rings figure with us here. It's the Aragorn figure.
Aragorn as Strider, right?
Yes, as Strider the Ranger.
Right.
Correct. Much like the Star Wars figures that they've been putting out, the 12-inch Star Wars figures, you know, he comes with a bevy of accessories, different hand sculpts, all of his different weapons, you know, bows, swords, etc., etc. You know, like all Sideshow 12-inch pieces, he's really nice. I kind of like the packaging on this. Again, they've redefined the packaging for the Lord of the Rings figures. And I think it's really important that they keep that fresh, because it gives each line its own individuality. You don't get stuck into this simple packaging, and especially when you're keeping these pieces in their packaging, that's very important for when you're displaying them, because it really makes them stand out from each other. So this figure has kind of like a double flap Velcro system on it, a little different than the original Sideshow single flap Velcro system, and the box is probably about the size of a box and a half
right,
of the old Sideshow 12 right. inch figures side by side. You know, it's got great Aragorn
and actually it opens,
cover art. And,
it opens kind of like a little doorway in the front there.
Yeah, it's
like a double doorway.
Like a double doorway. Yeah, it's, you know, it's very epic feeling.
Right, lots of flavor nice. Text. It's a great Viggo Mortensen likeness. You can equip him right up to the hilt, uh-huh. just like they were when they were doing those scenes in Fellowship where they're running across the fields and
right, right.
taking up refuge and Storm Reacher, Watcher, whatever that little fort thing was. That,
right.
Whatever that place was. I always forget.
Yeah, I forget too. There's too much that, Tolkien that stuff to remember.
Place where the things attacked them.
Exactly.
The Lord, the Rith, the Wraiths. Things.
The point being that Sideshow is really continuing with another great line. Ken?
Okay. Are these still open friendly too? Like if you wanted to display them, but maybe sometime in the future put him back in the box.
Yeah, he's trade. So if you were to open up the top flap on the box, you can kind of pull out the tray.
Slide the tray out.
Pop out the figures, nice. Display him. He comes with a base like most of the Sideshow 12-inch right. figures, although I would gather to say that depending on how you posed him and depending on his weight ratio, I haven't actually played with the Aragorn one yet,
right.
you probably could display him without the base. So,
right.
So it's a great line. I'm glad Sideshow, again, has picked up that license, and I hope they really, really run with it. I'd like to see how
Lots
they're going to handle the
planned.
Hobbits, to be
yeah.
honest with you. I wonder if they're going to maybe do two at a time or one at a time or how they're going
to
handle that.
Interesting. Very interesting to see how they're going to move forward. I think Legolas is next
well, that
for them
makes
in
sense.
That line.
The two most
and then,
popular cute guy
and then Boromir. Characters.
And then Boromir, really?
I think so,
That's
yeah.
an interesting choice for a third piece. Actually, out of the entire Fellowship, I would expect him to be the last piece that they would put out, but good for him that he's getting a third
really?
Piece. Good for Mr.
Good for Sean
Mr.
Bean.
Sean, yeah.
Well, I would expect that Bill would be the last one they would do.
Really?
Yeah. Why would they? What? What are you saying? They're not going to do Bill?
Maybe Bill will come with Sam.
Well, that would make sense. Why would you not do Bill?
I know, because he's not part of the original Fellowship, kind of, sort of.
Really?
Fellowship was nine people. Was it nine people and a horse named Bill?
Nine people and one donkey. Why does everyone leave out Bill?
Because he's a jackass. Anyway, we're going to move into another Sideshow piece that...
You're racist.
That I'm really... How am I racist?
Because you call him jackass. What, do they all look the same to you?
That's not racist.
Jackass and donkey the same thing?
Yes.
They are? Jackasses and donkeys are the same.
Aren't they?
And mules? They all the same?
Burrow? I don't care. You're an ass. That's what I know.
Hey, you know, you got to redirect
your anger
at
me. What I do know is assholes and douchebags are the same, and you're both, so it works out. So,
wow.
So, Sideshow.
The last refuge of the illiterate.
Exactly. So, next from Sideshow would be this, the Sideshow Marvel accessory sculptures that they have been putting out.
Right.
There was, Thor's hammer was one of the
Thor's
pieces.
Thor's hammer was one of those. They're basically kind of miniaturized versions of famous accessories from Marvel
and
characters.
It's really the weapons, it seems to be. It's the weapons
of these.
Did they
do a Captain America shield? Was that the other one?
They might have. There was another one before Thor. Thor was actually the second one.
I can't remember.
Oh, no. They did Doom. They did Doom's faceplate on the throne.
Yes.
This piece, and both of those pieces were really nice, but I wasn't too excited about them. This piece, however, really excited about, really jazzed about it. It would be Doc Ock's tentacles and goggles. And it kind of comes on this fancy little display base, says Dr. Octopus on it. It's got the four tentacles all kind of flailed out, and
right.
two of the tentacles are reaching up and gripping the goggles in the middle. And it's got the chest plate there that holds him to Doc Ock's body.
Actually, it's based on the comic, so I think it's just the back plate.
Or the... Is that the back plate, though?
I think so.
Yeah, you know what? I can't tell because of the way it's posed on the base. It kind of looks like it might belong on the front.
I think in the comics it was just the back, wasn't it?
Yes, it was. Yeah, I believe it was just fused to his back. So,
I don't know. I think it's just the back.
Needless to say, it's a nice
beautiful
piece.
Yeah.
It's, you know, Sideshow, I think, upping the scale with this piece. It's a little bit bigger than the other two pieces that they've put out before.
Is it
bigger scale-wise, do you think? Or do you think maybe it's just there's so much of it that it seems like it's bigger?
I don't know. The scale seems to be a little bit bigger to me, okay. too. I mean, okay. just this piece here in the middle seems a little bit larger than I remember Thor's hammer being, okay. for example. So I don't know. But definitely a solid piece from Sideshow. Definitely worth checking out. It's part of the Marvel Archives series. And
Marvel has an archive too, huh?
They do. Not nearly as
impressive,
cool as ours.
That's true.
Let's
round it out.
Finally... And this is a piece that I'm very excited about. And I've been waiting
for ahead and
for
talk,
a really long time.
Because I can see already the beads of sweat on your head that you've glanced at the piece.
Yeah, it's
and your legs tapping.
All flushed.
Jeez.
This
you're like
be,
one step away from jumping on her.
It's Sarah Michelle Gellar. This would be the quarter scale Buffy piece that Sideshow put out. Sideshow has a long history with the Buffy line. They've put out a lot of 12-inch pieces. All
beautiful
of them 12-inch. Really, really, really good. Mm-hmm. The sculpts and likeness on all of them, amazing. The accessories, amazing. And this really takes it to the next level. It's kind of creepy. I have mine actually set up already in my office at home, and it really looks like Sarah Michelle Gellar. The likeness is really, really good.
I'm going to tip my pervert geek hand here because I've actually seen Matt's set up Buffy. And Sideshow, smart move, actually slapped a thong on Buffy.
Really?
Yeah.
That's just, I didn't even look. Wait a minute.
Yeah, Ken took a peek
wow.
under her dress. And she
I'm
is
really
wearing
ashamed.
A thong.
You're really dirty. I didn't even think of doing that.
I believe he also checked the other
no,
areas
you
of her body. But,
there are no areola.
But there are no
Buffy.
Nipples
yeah.
on the Buffy
oh,
piece.
Oh, good gravy.
Yep.
I'm
ashamed of myself.
She has real eyelashes, by the way.
Really?
I was looking at her closer the other day. I was actually taking some snapshots of her for collectiblebitsbox.com. We've got a full review on her coming up later this week, actually.
Oh, awesome.
But, yeah, I noticed that they actually gave her, like, little eyelashes, which I thought was... kind of neat.
Yeah, that's the quality of the detail of a museum replica
sure.
piece, which is really what these quarter scales are, guys. These are the museum quality collectibles that you're looking for in a given topic. So in the Buffy version here, in the Buffy genre, this is a museum quality piece.
Sure.
A replica of her that is fully to scale. As much detail as they can possibly cram into a statue of this type.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely beautiful. The thong thing is really bugging me. So, the fact that you look... And then, if that wasn't enough, you had to go look under the top to see what was under there. That's a little
guilty.
Disturbing. The likeness, as was said earlier, spot on. Just a beautiful likeness, a beautiful sculpt. I mean, these pieces, the quarter scales... they just get better and better and better.
It's true.
I mean, it's one thing when they're doing pieces of, like, characters. Like, they did the Logan piece.
Right.
They did it Iron Man. They did the Green Goblin. It's one thing. There's
right.
so much license. Not license in the sense that they don't own the property. But you have so much artist license in a sculpt of the Green Goblin.
Right.
You know what I mean? There's a lot of room to breathe there because...
it's interpretive.
Exactly. You can't interpret Sarah Michelle Gellar. You
no.
got to get it right, and you got to get it really right because you want the fans to appreciate it. I think Sideshow has really, again, stepped up. It's like, where could they possibly go from here? It's almost it almost scares me like they're going to have to maintain now.
Uh-huh.
You know, they've reached a level here where they're going to need to maintain this level of quality and quite frankly, I want to say that I'm worried, but knowing Sideshow and the history of the company and the history of the products, I can't worry.
You know, out of all the stuff we know about Sideshow and all the times we've talked to reps from Sideshow, you know, I've never really thought about knowing who the sculptors are before. I mean, I'm always so taken back by the product. The product is always gorgeous. You know, we know these other sculptors. We know Bowens, and we know, what was the other gentleman we were talking about before? His name is eluding me right now, from Diamond. He's doing the Diamond
oh,
stuff.
Oh, yeah,
Gene. Yeah, we know
John
Gene. We know
Gene
Bowen.
Gene.
We know these guys, you
right.
know? I got to know who the sculptors at Sideshow are. We've got to find out from them.
I don't think... I would like to say that one of the things that's very popular these days, I want to find out if this is true about Sideshow or not. We really should get somebody from Sideshow on the show.
Yeah, we need to. Soon.
Yeah, we really should do that. Because I want to know if this is a group effort or if this is a single sculptor or maybe two sculptors that are involved in the sculpting process here. Because there are companies out there, like I know for a fact McFarlane does this. McFarlane, they kind of all work on everything.
Right.
You know what I mean? There may be like some lead sculptors on a piece, but they kind of all work on everything a little bit up there. And they produce, I think, really quality pieces by doing stuff that way. And I'm wondering if Sideshow has that sort of model. And I'm wondering if, you know, I know some of these other companies have that sort of model. I don't know that DC Direct does. I think DC Direct just has, I don't know, what that kid. I always forget that kid. Is it Tim Bruckner?
It might be.
I don't know. Whoever that sculptor kid is, they got some uber sculptor genius up there locked up in some room somewhere with clay. And he's just like, he's like the painter in Heroes when he's just like, his eyes roll back white and he doesn't even look. He's just like, you know, he's like sculpting like the girl in the Lionel Richie video. Hello. It's just like, it's got to just be amazing. It's got to be amazing. And I'm wondering if I'm wondering what the Sideshow production model is, and I think we really should find out.
Well, if it's a handful of guys, they are consistently amazing.
You know, I visited out there.
Yeah, I know.
When I was out there, and I still don't know the answer to that question. I probably should.
I know.
I was so overwhelmed.
It's like they have them like hidden away, like they don't want anybody to know for fear that they'll defect and go someplace else.
Where would you go? If you were a sculptor at Sideshow, where would be up for you?
Start your own company. I don't know.
Well, maybe. Don't do it.
Please stay at Sideshow. Please. I'm not suggesting anything. I'm just saying. So
please, don't put ideas in their head.
I think that wraps up the incoming section.
I think so. The incoming section. I love that. We should use that.
I don't think that we should.
Incoming exclamation point.
Maybe we'll get away with it once or twice.
Why?
Just saying.
Is there some other relevant news source using it?
There is. 30 pages worth, apparently.
All right. Well, that's true. I guess we've said enough about that. So, yes, that's our incoming section.
We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back shortly.
With the wrap-up.
Yes.
Because this is a long-ass episode.
It is.
Greetings, Starfighter. You have been recruited by the Star League to defend the frontier against Zur and the Kodan Armada.
Hey, this is Lance Guest from The Last Starfighter, and you're listening to Big Kev's Geek Stuff.
It'll be a slaughter!
That's the spirit!
Just like the NOM, man. It's just like waking up in the NOM. It's like you're waking up in the NOM, and all of a sudden they're coming all around you, and the call goes out over the radio. Incoming. Incoming. We got gooks in the wire. Gooks in the wire.
You need help.
I'm flashing back a little, that's all. The war was rough for me.
Was it?
Yeah.
Okay, can we continue with this wrap up?
Fine,
since that's what we're here to do now.
Sorry, did I have a little emotional moment? Sorry. Yeah,
you're always an emotional moment. So,
sick burn.
So Lego says it's not going to have enough Legos for Christmas this year.
Ooh, deja vu.
Yeah, really, right?
What did we talk about this episode, Matt?
Legos. Not having enough Legos for Christmas this year, particularly in the Star Wars, Technic, and Lego City lines.
We really think that's probably going to hurt them.
See. Diamond Select has announced that they've got an Office Space license. They're going to be putting out a slew of collectibles, none of which are figures yet, I don't believe. But we'll have to see what that means for them. Again, it doesn't seem like it should be a Diamond line. It seems more fitting for a company like NECA, but I don't know. We'll have to see.
Staplers and Flair. Yeah, that's exactly what I want.
Stapler. Exactly.
I want a swing line replica stapler.
I want my stapler.
You can get a swing line replica stapler at fucking Staples.
Yeah, but you can't get a red one.
Yeah, you can.
Oh, I always see the black ones. I don't know.
I got a red one in my office. I got a red one over here somewhere, I think.
No, you can get the red one at thinkgeek.com. They actually have the red replica stapler from Office Space.
There, yeah, how much is it? Like $30?
No, I don't know.
Staples like $4 at Staples. Ridiculous.
Anyway, Ben Affleck is ashamed of his tight-wearing days, and so he is saying he's no longer going to be putting on tights, no more superhero movies. I wonder if this is because maybe he's afraid Hollywoodland isn't going to do so good. And
what? Hollywoodland was awesome, and it did really well.
I don't know. Just saying. I'm just guessing. I'm throwing things out there. I don't know for sure.
Is he throwing on some weight? Not self-conscious?
Perhaps.
Small ego issues?
Maybe. We also talked about the Spider-Man 3 villain images that were leaked online that Sony asked Ain't It Cool to pull, but other sites have it. So you can check them out. Again, I think the Goblin one is the most interesting of the three. He does kind of look like
X-Games reject.
Yeah, an X-Games reject, kind of on a snowboard type thing.
Interesting.
We'll see what happens. We also talked about the release of the Transformers 20th anniversary movie DVD, as well as some of the concept designs that were leaked on Bumblebee and his weapons arsenal. Most notably would be the arm cannon and the shoulder missile launcher, and how those will play into both the character and the film. We talked a little bit about Fox developing a new pilot called the Sarah Connor Chronicles, which will obviously be about Sarah Connor and her son John Connor, taking place between the Terminator 2 and 3 films. And I don't really think it's going to go very far.
I talked about the Marvel Legacy, the 1980s handbook, which is just yet another piece of ridiculous, useless fluff from Marvel.
Right.
Trying to make us believe that there is one Marvel universe, or that there was one in the 80s, which there kind of was, until they started splintering off these other universes, like the New Universe. The new universe, which appears in this 80s handbook as a part of the Marvel universe, which nobody in this room understands.
Universin?
As well as characters like Rocket Raccoon and Peter Porker, the spectacular spider ham. Arguably the stupidest concept ever. And there it is, part of your Marvel universe.
That's right.
So you can check that out. I also mentioned briefly, but with a great amount of excitement, the Firefly, the official companion, Volume 1, with full and complete scripts for 5 episodes. Lots of pictures and concept art, as well as props and designs and backstage pictures and just all manner of beautiful imagery that you'll want if you're a Firefly fan, with the promise on the last page of the official companion Volume 2 coming spring 2007.
You know, when I first saw this book in your bag today from the comic book store. I actually thought it was a companion to the RPG, which obviously it's not. But you know what? The more I think about it, the more I kind of glance through it and look at it. You really could use it as a companion to the RPG because
absolutely.
It's filled with information about the weapons, the outfits, mythos, photos, pictures, right. That kind of stuff. So it really is a multitasker.
Yes, definitely. It's definitely, if you're a fan of Firefly, you're going to want to get a hold of it. There's not, let's face it, unfortunately, there's just not going to be a lot of Firefly stuff.
Right.
And because of its premature removal from the airwaves and the very unlikely return that right. everyone is talking about on the Sci-Fi Channel. So that being said, you're a Firefly fan. You want the Firefly Companion Volume 1.
Moving right into what we talked about in the second segment of the show today.
We move right into stuff all the time.
We do move right into stuff all the time. I like move right into. It's a nice phrase somehow. Anyway, we talked about a slew of product that we've gotten here in the studio, some new stuff that's come out. Tonner has sent us a couple more pieces. There's the...
from their exquisite Harry Potter line.
Right. It would be the Harry Potter as the Seeker in his Quidditch outfit, along with a Hedwig accessory and a Crookshanks accessory.
Right.
Crookshanks being Hermione's cat, Hedwig being Harry's owl.
We moved then into the Cthulhu pieces.
Correct.
From Soda. We not too familiar with H.P. Lovecraft's works. We bring in Ken. Ken says they're good pieces as compared to what they're supposed to be. I'll have to say I agree because I can't say I don't. They look really great to me. I think they're awesome. You can check them out at
sodatoys.com. Again, the three pieces were Cthulhu, Dagon, and the Ghoul.
Right. I like the Ghoul. And then we moved into one of our favorites, of course, DC Direct, and their latest line, Dark Victory, five characters from the book by Jeff Loeb and Tim Sale.
Five characters, but four actual
packages right.
because Robin and the Penguin come together.
Right. Also rounding out that line are Batman, Commissioner Gordon,
excellent
and
piece.
The Scarecrow.
Yes.
Excellent piece. Great display packaging. You don't even have to take them out. They display well right in the packaging, and they have captured once again, very successfully, the art of Tim Sale in three-dimensional form. Bravo, DC Direct.
Correct. Then we talked about Sideshow and some of the pieces that they're distributing now.
Right, some of the imports.
Right, these would be two particular pieces from Hong Kong. Hot Toys is the company, and they would be pieces from the Alien versus Predator line. They are 1/6 scale, fully posable model kits.
Once they're assembled.
Right. The two we had in studio was the Elder Predator and the Chopper Predator, but also in that line was Celtic Predator.
An Alien.
Alien Warrior. And there was another Predator.
And another one.
I'm missing right now.
Hey, you know what? Why don't you go right ahead to SideshowToy.com and you can probably see them all right over there.
Correct. Then we talked about
Aragorn.
Lord of the Rings 12-inch figure Aragorn, which would be the first in the Sideshow Lord of the Rings 12-inch line. Again, they've really done a great job with the packaging, changing it up, keeping it fresh, making it new for the Lord of the Rings figures. The Aragorn piece itself is top-notch. All the accessories, the sculpt looks great.
The Viggo Mortensen
exactly what we expect.
Likeness is excellent.
It is.
And that's so important to these guys over at Sideshow to get that right, and they do time after time, even in the 12-inch line, which is great.
It's true. We then talked about the next piece in the Marvel Archive line, which would be Doc Ock and his tentacles and goggles set. Again, this would be the line that they've been putting out. Thor's hammer was another piece in line. I think it was Doctor Doom and his mask and throne.
Right.
It's kind of like the weapons accessories of these iconic Marvel characters. I think the scale on this one might be a little bit bigger than the other ones, although I'm not 100% sure because I don't have them all in front of me to compare. But it's a really, really great looking piece.
Right.
Definitely worthwhile if you're a Marvel fan or a Spider-Man fan. You should grab it if you can.
Absolutely.
We then talked about the quarter scale Buffy figure.
And again, Sideshow has really raised the bar with this piece, even for themselves.
I worry that they have now reached a point where I don't understand how they could possibly get any better than they are right now. That piece is exquisite.
It is, and the likeness is so good, it's almost creepy. Again, they gave her real eyelashes, which is really a nice little touch, something we've come to expect from Sideshow. And as Ken pointed out,
of course,
for us,
pervert Ken pointed out to us that Sideshow did have the wherewithal to give Buffy a thong.
They did.
Genius.
Very, very much genius.
So definitely a worthwhile piece if you are a Buffy fan. Definitely a worthwhile piece if you're a Sideshow fan in general. And again, it's taking the quarter scale line to a new level, I think. And I can't wait to see what's next.
That being said, this has been episode 31, Incoming. That's a great name.
It is.
Next week, you can look forward to episode 32, Five Teeth Shy.
All right.
I'm going to go ahead and lay that one out for people right now, and let's see what happens on the old message board for that one.
Okay.
And I would like to end with the following statement. 30 pages of Incoming, 26 pages of relevant toy information, and 6 pages of funny. Technically 7 pages. We kind of missed one. So it's 7 pages of funny.
Bravo.
Bravo. Worth every penny of the $4.99.
And on that note, we cue the music.
She looked good. She looked fine. She looked fine. She looked good. She looked.